This is Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levenson. There's a common myth told about 19th century New Orleans. It goes something like this. Imagine you're in an elegant dance hall in New Orleans in the early 1800s. Looking around, you see a large group of white men and free women of color, who were at the time called quadroons, meaning they supposedly had a quarter African ancestry. The mothers of the free women of color are there to play matchmaker and introduce their daughters to these white men, who then ask their hand in a dance. The ballroom is fancy, and the invited guests look the part. When a match is made, a contract is drawn up. The white man agrees to take care of the young woman and any children she may have with him. This arrangement is called plaçage.
Plaçage is defined historically as where a white man would basically have a relationship with a free woman of color where she would be kept.
That's Charles Chamberlain. He teaches history at the University of New Orleans.
So that he would provide her with a house and some form of income so that she could maintain a lifestyle.
This is almost a vulgar way of thinking about it, but like the antebellum version of a side piece.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
What Charles is describing is basically a common law marriage, and those did happen. But the idea of quadroon balls is way sexier, which helps explain why they get talked about so much. French Quarter tour guides walk by the Bourbon Orleans Hotel and talk about the famous quadroon balls that took place inside. They describe the same scene as I just did. But Charles says, try to find proof of plaçage, and it's just not there.
I don't believe that any contracts, any plaçage contracts, have ever been found or uncovered. And so this is part of the legend that historians who have studied it have a hard time validating.
But what about the balls where these arrangements were made? These famous quadroon balls? They had to exist, right?
Well, I don't think there's any evidence that speaks to that.
Welcome to
Tripod Mythbusters.
Quadroon Ball Edition.
Well, the ball is just part of the myth.
Emily Clark is a professor of American colonial history at Tulane University. She concurs that there's no evidence suggesting that the balls, so often described, ever happened regularly, or that formal plaçage agreements existed. She calls this myth the plaçage complex.
So here's the myth. New Orleans is full of beautiful mixed-race women, free, and so their mothers would shop them out to these wealthy white men. And the mothers would get the white man to do a contract saying, I'm going to set her up in a nice little house on Rampart Street, and I'm going to provide for her and any children born of the relationship. So the mother would draw up this contract and basically sell her daughter off.
There are a lot of stereotypes perpetuated in this myth. The over-sexualization of women of African descent, a lack of strong nuclear families among free people of color. And the sad thing, says Emily, is that it just keeps getting repeated. It won't go away.
So it's a whole narrative, and we see it over and over again in the sources, which is one of the reasons why even historians have been kind of duped, because it's in a lot of the sources. The story keeps getting told over and over again, but if you dig a little bit,
you start to see who these women really were. Barbara Trevine is a native New Orleanian and a Creole. Emily told me to call her.
Emily probably brought up my name because Emily knows that my ancestry go back to pre-colonial Louisiana.
Barbara actually told me that she goes as far back as the Last Supper.
They were getting ready to take the picture for the Last Supper. I had to leave and go do something. You know, I missed the picture.
You missed the picture. She decided to research her family history and free women of color ancestors.
I am from Joseph Trevino, who was from Biscaya, Spain. He was living with Marguerite Guitton Mounier, who was one of the first women of color to own property in Faubourg Tremé.
The Tremé and French Quarter are where most free women of color lived and owned property. In her digging, Barbara only found one documented instance of a quadroon ball that apparently happened in 1805.
There was one mixed ball in particular, and that's the only one I could ever find.
Not only that, but when she looked into plaçage, she found the relationships were not so visitation-based.
I'll make it very, very easy.
Great.
You visit your mistress. You live with the person you consider your wife.
These interracial couples couldn't legally marry, but they lived under one roof. How did you come to understand that what was being pushed as truth was, in fact, false?
Well, because I went in archives. dusty, moldy records, developed sinus infections, vision problems. And I realized that the truth was much more fascinating than anything anybody could dream up.
You're listening to Tripod, New Orleans at 300. I'm Lane Kaplan-Levenson. So if quadroon balls rarely happened, where did these men and women meet?
I know where the men met these women.
Emily Clark found the truth in the same place that Barbara did, the archives.
Sometimes they met them in church. Sometimes they met them through business. The whole notion of going to a ball and shopping, it's just not the way those kinds of things happened.
She says free women of color weren't those kinds of girls trotting about at a ball for sale.
Free women of color were the most pious people in New Orleans in the colonial period. They're the ones who are filling St. Louis Cathedral, literally filling it. But we don't know that story about them. We know instead the story about quadroon balls and plissage and all that.
Well, here's where it gets a little tricky. Plissage isn't all legend. The origin of this is surprising. The Haitian Revolution. For the purposes of this episode, you don't need to know much about the Haitian Revolution. Just know that thousands of Haitian refugees fled to New Orleans in the very early 1800s, almost doubling the population of the city.
Can you imagine what that must have been like? And if you look anywhere in the world today where there are refugees, we know what happens to those women and children, and especially to the women. They come with nothing. They are looking for security anywhere they can find it. And so for a brief, really tragic moment in this city's history, there were a lot of free women of color who were available for short-term relationships and maybe even for prostitution. But what I think is really important is to recognize that it was time limited, but it created a reputation for the city.
Emily says if there were anything like quadroon balls, they were parties marketed to sailors and tourists looking for a one-night stand, not a long-term relationship. They were a seedy tourist attraction.
It's almost like how many people that live in New Orleans are going and buying shots off of shot girls on Bourbon Street.
Right, exactly. You're right.
The eye-popping legend overshadows the real and kind of mundane everyday lives of these free women of color, who married free men of color, who had lifelong relationships with white men, who were devout Catholics, and highly powerful property owners. Barbara says, just look at the city's earliest census reports.
So when you see the census, you see that it's dotted all over in the French Quarter because these women were entrepreneurs. They worked and they purchased their freedom and they were able to purchase a home and they reared their children.
Emily says the fact that we've believed this plissage myth for so long shines a big, bright light on a disturbing bias in American society.
And so we rob them of having attained the ideal of being a lady when we erase their story and instead accept what was the story told about all black women, which was that, you know, it's not white men's fault that they go to bed with black women. And even that they rape them, it's the women's fault because they are so seductive. It's what they want. So it's that old story that's told. You know, it's in the news right now. It's always the woman's fault. Well, it wasn't the woman's fault. And so when we buy this myth, we're buying into that really old, socially destructive, and just plain not historically accurate idea about women of African descent.
She says white women in the 19th century frankly didn't want to believe their brothers, sons, and even husbands could be in love with a black woman. So they were inclined to believe and spread this myth too, that it was purely sexual. But Barbara says not only is that ridiculous, that it was just about sex, but she asks, can you actually imagine hundreds of pious upper middle class families participating in a system like that?
Do the listeners out there really think that their father would have allowed them to go to a ball, sign a contract, and then when he would decide to get married,
the white man to a white woman,
his poor daughter would be left alone. He would go about his way with his new family. I don't think so. Right.
Tripod is a production of WWNO New Orleans Public Radio in collaboration with the Historic New Orleans Collection and the University of New Orleans Midlow Center for New Orleans Studies. Special thanks to Evan Christopher for the opening theme music. Catch Tripod on the air Thursdays during Morning Edition and again on Mondays during All Things Considered. You can hear this episode of Tripod and any episode of Tripod anytime, anywhere. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Rate it, review it. It will really help for season two. Next week, we start something new called Tripod Extras. In between new episodes, we will be releasing exclusive interviews with special guests. Guest number one coming at you next week, Cokie Roberts. Stay tuned for that. But for now, I'm Lane Kaplan-Levenson, and...
Hey, this is Charles Chamberlain. I will tripod you later.